Good evening. I'm going to ask you at this point to go ahead and open your Bibles to Psalm chapter 37. Psalms 37. We're going to begin there in a moment or two. But before we do, I want to kind of talk about what our lesson is going to be for tonight. I'm going to be talking about adversity and hardships and how do we as Christians respond to these? How do we as Christians, how do we let them impact us? And you know, the whole concept of hardships, struggles, these kinds of things, it's an interesting discussion. In fact, I did a sermon on it 8 years ago. I'm sure you guys remember it very well. In that sermon, I made the point that a lot of times atheists and agnostics, they talk about suffering in the world, and they look at this and they say, well, there is proof that there cannot be a God because there's suffering in the world, there's hardships in the world. And if there was a good God who's a loving God, who's an all-powerful God, He wouldn't let these things happen. In fact, there was a man, a rabbi man, a Jewish man named Rabbi Harold Kushner. And he lost his son, and this really impacted his faith, and he began to question, if there is an all-powerful, all-loving God, how could this have happened? How could my son have been taken away from me? So he actually ended up writing a book called Why Do Bad Things Happen to Good People? And it was a bestseller on the New York Times book many years ago. Very well-known speaker and writer, Rabbi Harold Kushner. And in this book, he dealt with these issues. He asked these questions, and he couldn't really handle them very well because what he concluded is there is a God, and He is all-loving, but unfortunately, He's not all-powerful. So we have a God, according to Rabbi Harold Kushner, who wishes He could intervene in your life, who wishes He could intervene in the world, but He simply is too weak to do so. Well, it's kind of an interesting thought. We're not going to spend a lot of time on that tonight. I kind of got off the subject a little bit there. But it's an interesting question. If there is an all-powerful God and an all-loving God, why does He allow these things to happen? And I think if you kind of took that question and you kind of turned it around a little bit, you could use it the other direction. How many of you would say that there's good in this world? That there's loving people in this world? That there's good things that happen to you because of good people? Because of good creation? Because of good... There's good things in this world. There's loving things. There's wonderful things. And so if they can argue that there must not be a God because evil exists, could we not argue that there must be a God because good exists? And again, I'm not going to spend time on that, but it's an interesting question, and it's one that I think that we as Christians, we need to be aware of, because it's going to be one that if you ever talk with an atheist or an agnostic, it's very possibly going to be something they bring up. And how are you going to answer that? It's a very important question. And where do hardships come from? What is the cause of hardships? What is the cause of struggles? What is the cause of the difficulties you're facing in your life right now? You know, as you look at hardships, you may come up to... You might start thinking, well, it's because I've made a bad decision. I personally should have done this, and I did this instead, and because of that, I'm having a hard time. Or maybe because I lacked in God. I didn't have the trust in God I should have, and that was a sin. And so maybe you can look at your own life and say, I have problems because I've done them internally. They're my own fault. It's also very possible that you have problems in your life, and they're no fault of yours. They're no fault of yours. They may not be a fault. They may be your parents' fault. They may not be. Maybe the government's fault. They may not be. But we can look and we can talk about what is the source of hardships in our life. They're either going to be internally induced or externally induced. There's not any other options. Those are the two options. And we all are going to have hardships. And really, again, the focus of my lesson is not to talk about what hardships we have, but how are we supposed to respond to them? How do we handle them as Christians, as people trying to be righteous? How do we handle them? So in Psalm chapter 37, let's go ahead and begin here in verse 23. Psalm 37, verse 23. The psalmist writes here, "The steps of a man are established by the Lord when he delights in his way. Though he fall, he shall not be cast headlong, for the Lord upholds his hand. I have been young and now am old, yet I have not seen the righteous forsaken or his children begging for bread." Verse 23, the psalmist makes this comment. When we delight in the Lord, when we delight in the Lord, when we delight in His way, He establishes our steps. When we delight in His way, God establishes our steps. So first of all, one of the benefits of righteous living, and I want you to see this, is that God establishes our steps. He makes them so that they're not slippery. He makes them so that they are in the right direction. My sons and I, they like to go for walks or bike rides. Recently, it's been more bike rides than walks. And, you know, I like doing this with them. But I've never, ever done this. I've never, ever said, Dad, we want to go for walks. I've never once taken them to the end of the driveway. And I said, okay, sons, what I want you to do is head down 12 to A, hang a left on A, come back up Beacon, hang a right on a left on Madrone, and circle back around. Never once have I told my sons to do that. If I've ever taken them, if they've ever gone on a bike ride, I've always gone with them. Every single time. Now, there obviously will come a time when I won't, but right now, I walk with them. I ride with them. I'm constantly watching out for dangers that at this point they're not aware of. At this point, they're not understanding the danger of a driveway. You know, son, you got to watch out for that driveway because cars can back out of there anytime and they can't see you. So I'm constantly trying to watch out for them. The psalmist says, when we delight in the Lord, the steps of man are established by the Lord when He delights in His way. When we delight in God's way, He establishes our steps. Matthew Henry wrote a commentary on this passage, and he made this comment. He, talking about God, God does not show him His way at a distance, but leads him step by step, and so keeps him in a continual dependence upon His guidance. That's like what I was talking about earlier. God doesn't take us to the end of the driveway and tell you, okay, Nathan, go down here and hang a left, and then you're going to come to some trouble. Hang another left at that hardship and come up and circle around. God doesn't do that. He walks with us step by step, establishing our path, making sure that we're on the right ground. He establishes our step. He doesn't leave us. He walks with us step by step. And what is implied in this passage? You know, he says, if we delight in the Lord's way, He establishes our step. What is implied in this passage, if you look at it the other direction? What's going to be to the person, what's going to happen to the person when we do not delight in the Lord's way? Well, then God is not going to establish our steps. He's not going to make your path secure. He is not, and listen to this, He is not going to walk the path with you when you do not delight in His way. Verse 24, that passage we just read, it says, though he fall, he shall not be cast headlong, for the Lord upholds his hand. And this is another point that I think that we are all extremely aware of. The righteous will fall. It's not a matter of the righteous are protected by God so we never fall. The righteous are going to fall. There's not any mistake about that. They're going to fall. But the difference is, when we fall, we have an outcome that's different than those in the world. When we fall, look at what it says. Though he fall, he shall not be cast headlong. Why not? Why isn't he going to have a serious injury when the righteous person falls? For the Lord upholds his hand. For the Lord upholds his hand. We're going to fall. We're going to have sin in our life. We're going to have struggles in our life. We're going to have hardships in our life. We're going to fall. But if we are righteous, if we love the way of God, if we delight in Him, He's going to hold our hand. So the fall's not going to be as bad. It's not going to be as detrimental to you if you let God hold your hand. My wife decided this last year she wanted to take on a very dangerous pastime. I wasn't real fond of the idea, but she sucked Andrea into it, and I think Michelle Parker also. And these three ladies began in a very dangerous, they started doing something very dangerous and not wise. They decided they were going to start going ice skating. And if you've never done it, it's really, really bad to ice skate. If you like your body at all, you don't want to go ice skating. But my wife and Michelle and I think all three of those ladies, they decided they were going to take their kids ice skating. So they take them ice skating, and my wife comes back and says, hey, we had a great time. Dyson loved it. We need to take Blade ice skating now. And I need you to go with me. And so I went with them. And I didn't enjoy it. No, it was all right. But, you know, but it's really scary. You know, you're like Frankenstein, and, you know, really bad. I'm not a good ice skater. But my son comes up to me as he's learning it, Blade as he's learning it, and Dyson as he's learning to ice skate. And what do they want? Me to hold their hand. Well, you know, first of all, I'm not great at ice skating, but I can do this, okay? So I'm holding their hand as we're ice skating. And you know why I'm holding their hand? Because they're going to fall. And whether it was wise on their part or not to choose me, they had trust, they had faith in me, that when they fell, I was going to hold them up. And here's the point I want you to see from this. They fell over and over and over. But because I held their hand, they never got injured. They never got their head cracked. They never got their fingers ran over. So I was making sure when they fell that I was there to pick them up. That's what the psalmist is telling us here. Though he fall, and he's going to fall, God's going to make sure you're okay because he's holding your hand. So the first part of this I want you to see is when we delight in God's way, he establishes our step. The second part I want you to see is the righteous are going to fall, but because God holds our hand, we're going to be okay. The third part I want you to see is kind of a life lesson. The psalmist writes this, and he's an older man at this point as he's writing this, and he says in verse 25, he says, I have been young, and I am now old, yet I have not seen the righteous forsaken, or the children, or his children begging for bread. As he thinks back about life and how he has studied it, and how he has studied the life of a righteous person, he has noted that those who trust in God are taken care of by God. Now that does not mean there's never going to be a time in the life of a righteous person they're going to have hardships. It doesn't mean they're not going to happen. We can look at the book of Job and we can see that's not the case. But what it does mean is that the righteous are taken care of by a God who is all-powerful and all-loving, and He is not weak, and He is not disenchanted with us. He loves us, and He wants to be there for us. But we have to allow Him to hold our hand. And the psalmist remembers what he has seen. So the first three points I'm wanting to make from this first passage is that we need to recognize as Christians that God walks with us. He makes our path secure. Number two, we need to realize that the righteous are held by the hand of God. Number three, we need to remember that God has not forsaken the righteous. How many times have you thought, where's God in my life right now? Where's God as I'm going through hardships? Where's God as I'm struggling? But here's the part I'm wanting you to remember. God has not forgotten about you. He has not forgotten about your hardships. He has not forgotten about your struggles. He has not forgotten about your prayers. He remembers you. I want you to turn over at this point to the book of Proverbs, chapter 24. Proverbs, chapter 24. We're going to read verse 10, then we're going to skip down and read verse 16. Proverbs 24, verse 10. Solomon says, if you faint in the day of adversity, your strength is small. If you faint in the day of adversity, your strength is small. Now down to verse 16. We'll come up and talk about verse 10 in a moment. Verse 16. For the righteous falls seven times and rises again, but the wicked stumble in times of calamity. The righteous falls seven times and rises again, but the wicked stumble in times of calamity. You want to know how strong your faith is, according to verse 10. You want to know how well you are doing, how strong you are right now. You want to know? Well, how do you respond to adversities? How do you respond to hardships? How do you respond when you sin in your life? How do you respond when you do these things? Do you continue to trust in God? Do you continue to honor God? Do you continue to worship God? And here's the hard one. Do you continue to thank God when you were going through hardships, when you're going through struggles? You want to know what your faith is like? How do you respond in times of adversity? Verse 16, I want to talk about that now. He says that the righteous falls seven times and rises again. Remember the Apostle Peter when he was with Jesus Christ and he asked Jesus, we talked about this a couple of weeks back, he asked Jesus, Lord, how many times should somebody sin against me and I forgive him? And Peter thinks he's being very generous, and he says, up to seven times, and Jesus responds, no, I tell you 70 times seven. Well, here's kind of a similar thing, isn't it? Here's the Proverbs, here's the Solomon writing, and he says, how many times should I fall and still get up, God? Let me ask you, how many times should you be faithful in hardships? How many times should you endure hardships? How many times can you go through these things When, at what point can we just give up and say, you know what, God, I've endured 7 hardships. I can now say I've had enough, God. Well, maybe we can say, God obviously doesn't care for me because I've endured 7 difficult times in my life. The Solomon says in verse 16, the righteous falls 7 times. But look at these next 3 verses. The next 3 words. And rises again. And rises again. He falls again, but he gets up again. He falls again, but he gets up again. One of my favorite stories that I've used numerous times to demonstrate this point comes back to when boxing was not determined by 15 rounds of 3 minutes each. But the old-time boxing, a round consisted of when somebody hit the canvas. That was one round. So the true determination became when that person hit the ground, did he get up? Because if he got up, the fight would continue. The longest fight ever recorded, the winner of that fight, gentleman Jim Corbett. If you like boxing, you've heard of him. He did bare knuckle boxing, and then he did this kind of boxing where the rounds were determined by how many times you fell. And Jim Corbett won this longest fight ever. 127 rounds. If you think about that, what that means is that somebody hit the canvas 126 times and got up. Either him or his opponent, which I believe was Sullivan, if I can't remember right. 126 times somebody hit the canvas and got up. But the 127th time, that's where the winner came. When somebody hit the canvas, the 127th time. So here was one person who loses this fight, and he may have gotten up. Hopefully he didn't hit the canvas all 127. But he may have hit the canvas 70, 80 times. And he fails to get up once, and he's the loser? Jim Corbett was asked about this, and he was asked, how did you keep going? You know, how did you overcome just the constant, you know, knocking down? And you know what he said? He says, I just kept saying, one more round. One more round. You see, Solomon says in this passage, the righteous falls 7 times and rises again. But the wicked stumble in times of calamity. How do we overcome adversity? Well, first of all, we remain strong in the day of adversity. That's the testing of our faith. Second thing is we rise again when we fall. We rise again when we fall. Not because I'm strong, not because you're strong, not because of how good you are, but you rise again when you fall because God holds your hand. You rise again when you fall because you know that even though you're going through hardships, even though you're going through struggles, even though hard things are happening in your life, you know these things are just a moment. Maybe it's just a day in your life. Maybe it's just a week in your life. Maybe it's just a month in your life. Maybe it's a year in your life. Maybe your whole lifetime is filled with adversity, but it's just a moment. Paul tells us that in the book of Corinthians, right? He says, this is just slight and momentary affliction because we're looking at something greater that's never going to end. So even if your life, and God forbid this is the case for any of you here, but even if your life is nothing but 75 years of adversity and struggle and hardships, hopefully it's not, but even if it is, it's just a moment. It's just a moment. In our Bible class, our Wednesday night Bible class a few months ago, I had the kids, we drew a timeline on the chalkboard representing 1,000 years, and this distance is 1,000 years. So how much of that 1,000 years is your life? And we measured it out. Average person is about 80 years. So we measured out about how much of that 1,000 years on that line was you. And it was not very much. And I said, okay. And I had another line already drawn, which I was trying to kind of conceal to them, which is 1,000,000 years. I said, how much of this line, which is 1,000,000 years, is your life right now? And it was just, I did the math on it. It was actually thinner than I could do with a piece of chalk, with a line of chalk. And I said, okay, now if we could, we can't, but if we were to stretch this line for it to represent 1,000,000,000 years and you could represent your life with a line of chalk, and I told them that it would be this amount, you know, like 0.00 whatever of an inch. And here's the point I was trying to make to them. Eternity is not 1,000 years. Eternity is not 1,000,000 years. Eternity is not 1,000,000,000 years. And even if your life is 75 years of hardships and struggles, it's just a speck of sand in the eternity that God is going to have for us. So it's just a moment. And so we as Christians need to realize that no matter how bad things are, even if it's my whole life, it's just a moment. What I want to do the next few minutes is I want to take some of these points and I want to try to make some new points also, and I want to try to leave you with some applications here. How can I, as a Christian, endure and overcome difficult times? How can we do that? Well, first of all, this one's going to be very obvious. Realize hardships, they can be overcome. You know, just realize that you can overcome these things in your life. You have the ability to do it. God is with you. He's rooting you on. And other people across time have overcome hardships too. I remember reading Peanuts a lot as a kid. I used to like those comics. I remember one time Charlie Brown, he was walking around and his face was real sad and he was depressed. And he was talking to himself and talking about how sad he was. And all of a sudden another one of the Peanut characters walked by and their face is sad and depressed. And the next, he's watching him. The next thing, he's got a big smile on his face. He says, "Nothing cheers me up like knowing somebody else is having an awful day." You know, the point that I'm trying to make is that we all go through hardships. We're not alone in them. Realize, first of all, you can overcome them. The Apostle Paul, if you have your Bibles, turn to 2 Corinthians chapter 4. 2 Corinthians chapter 4. And I love this passage, 2 Corinthians chapter 4. And this is a story of the Apostle Paul overcoming his hardships, okay? But we have this treasure, 2 Corinthians 4, verse 7. But we have this treasure in jars of clay to show that the surpassing power belongs to God and not to us. Now watch what he says. We are afflicted in every way, but we're not crushed. We're perplexed, but not driven to despair. Persecuted, but not forsaken, struck down, but not destroyed. Paul lists these things that are afflicting him and his companions as they're trying to do God's work. And he says, we are afflicted all the time, but it's not crushing us. And then the second thing he says here, this one really hits home with me. He says, I'm perplexed. He doesn't understand why he's going through hardships. He doesn't understand why God has this plan for him all the time. He doesn't understand, why do I have to have this thorn in the flesh? He's perplexed by these things. But this is what he says. I'm perplexed. I don't understand it, but I'm not driven to despair. That's an awesome thought for me. Because I'll tell you what, and I know it's an awesome thought for you too, at least I hope it is, because how many times have you wondered, why is God allowing me to go through this? I'm perplexed, I'm confused, I'm living a righteous life. God, why am I going through this? You ever had that thought? You ever had that sensation, that wonderment, that curiosity, why God? Paul did too. And even though he didn't know the answer, he said, but I'm not driven to despair. The Apostle Paul, the great evangelist, he faced all kinds of hardships too. He was faced with threats and abuse from Jews. He struggled with sin just like we do. Romans chapter 7 talks about his own personal struggles. He fought against pride in 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 7. And yet he says these things. He makes this comment that even though he's having a hard time, even though he's afflicted in every way, he's not crushed. He's not destroyed. He's not driven to despair. So here's the point I'm wanting you to get. If one person can overcome it, so can you. You're not alone in going through your hardships. Whatever they may be, you're not alone. Other people have faced them too. Don't give up. The second point I wanted to make here kind of goes along with this one. And it's from the book of Hebrews. So I'm going to have you turn over to Hebrews chapter 12. We're going to be looking at verses 1 through 3. So that last application point that I'm wanting you to get is, remember, realize you're not alone in your hardships. The second point is, remember how Christ overcame his hardships. Remember how Christ did it. The Hebrew writer tells us in verse 3 of Hebrews chapter 12, he says, consider Jesus as you go through your hardships. Look at Jesus as you're going through difficult times. That's what he tells us. Let's look at verse 1. Hebrews 12, verse 1. Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. Looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him, he says in verse 3, consider him who endured from sinners such hostility against himself. Why are we supposed to consider him? The Hebrew writer says this, so that you may not grow weary or faint-hearted. When you're going through hardships, when you're going through struggles, consider what Jesus did so that you don't go weary, so that you don't grow tired and give up. What did he do? He says, consider what he did. What did he do? Well, he looked at the cross. He knew the cross was coming. And the Hebrew writer tells us he despised the shame of the cross. He despised it. He despised the cross. Think about that for a second. Jesus Christ, we hang this cross on our necklace, on our jewelry, we put them all over the place. Jesus Christ despised the cross because it was going to bring him physical pain. It was going to mean separation from God. But because he looked past that part, he looked past that moment in time where he had to face that cross. He looked past that, and the Hebrew writer says in verse 2, look at this, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, who for the joy set before him. He looked at the cross, and even though he didn't want to do it, and even though he despised what it was, he saw joy in it. Because he knew what it was going to bring. He knew it was going to bring us to him. And because of that, he had joy in the cross. So how does considering Jesus help us when we're going through hardships? Well, you know, we're told that we have to carry our own cross, right? We have to bear our own cross daily. When you're going through hardships, when you're carrying your cross, realize that cross you're carrying makes you a better person. Makes you a stronger Christian. It tests you. It strengthens you. It builds endurance in you. When you're going through hardships, realize the benefit of the cross you are carrying. Look to Christ. Consider how He did it so that you do not grow weary also. Number 3. So the second point was remember how Christ overcame. The third point here, remember God's promises. Remember God's promises. I have a quote here for you. This is a quote from Eddie Clower. And Eddie Clower is quoting John Wesley. So it's going to be a double quote here. John Wesley said, fretting is as bad as swearing. That's what John Wesley said. Fretting is as bad as swearing. Think about that for a second. What does fretting mean? Well, it means that you're stressed out, you're depressed, you're concerned about things to the degree that it is consuming you. John Wesley said, that's just as bad as saying a bad word. That's just as bad as cussing. Listen to what Eddie Clover said. His statement is worth thinking about. For in swearing, people take lightly the name of God. And in fretting, they take lightly the promises of God. You see, when you're fretting, what does that mean? It means all those things God has already told me. You know, He said in Hebrews chapter 13, one of my favorite passages, God told us, I will never leave you or forsake you. When we're going through hardships and we're going through struggles and we feel like God has abandoned us, you know what that means? We're not remembering His promises. When we're going through hardships and we're going through struggles and things look so bleak and we're depressed and we're stressed out and we're fretting and we're just consumed with it, would Jesus tell us, take my yoke because it's easy? Would He tell us, don't be anxious about tomorrow because it's going to take care of Himself? Would He tell you, seek first the kingdom of God and these things will be added to you? Would He tell us that? Has He promised that to us? When we're going through hardships, I want to encourage you to remember God's promises. He has told us He's not going to abandon us. He's not going to forsake us. There was a Christian person being held in a concentration camp because of their belief system. And from their concentration camp, they wrote this statement. And I want to read it. I want you to listen to this statement. I think it's a powerful statement. No matter how deep our darkness, He is deeper still. No matter how deep our darkness, He is deeper still. No matter how bad the hardships are you're enduring, God is deeper still. No matter what struggles you're going through, God is deeper still. No matter what sins are surrounding you and clinging so closely to you, God is deeper still. Remember God's promises when you're going through hardships. The fourth and final point tonight. We need to realize that suffering and hardships in this world, you know, some people say, well, why doesn't God just take them out of here? Well, you know, suffering and hardships serve a good purpose. If God took them out of this world, why would we want to go to the next world? Why would we look forward to heaven? If God took out all the struggles in this life and made it so that you were always on Candy Lane and always with plates of gold and always doing all those good things, why would you need to go to heaven? We need to realize that suffering and hardships are reminders that this world is not our home. This is not where God had intended for us to live. In John chapter 14, remember Jesus Christ? He's talking to His apostles. He's getting ready to die. Chapter 12, 13, 14, 15, those chapters, Christ is getting ready to die. He's with His closest friends now. He's given them the last pieces of advice, the last pieces of encouragement for His crucifixion. And He tells them in John 14, I'm going to prepare a place for you. I'm going to prepare a place for you. We need to remember and we need to allow these hardships and these struggles to remind us this is not our home. We have a better place built by Christ Himself for you, with you in mind. If you're here this evening and you're going through struggles, if you're going through hardships, if we can help you in any way, maybe those struggles you're facing are sins. We would love to pray for you. We would love to encourage you. Maybe you've never been baptized into Christ and had your sins washed away. We would love to do that too if that's what you need. Anything at all, as we sing a song that's been selected.